previously on Cocaine Air.
So on his dying bed, he said, "Son, promise me one thing." I said, "Sure, Dad." He said, "Finish the project." So I said, "I promise you I'll finish the project."
And TJ Dominguez tries and tries and tries to finish the project to get that sugar mill in Haiti off the ground, to no avail.
I was just tired of being used and kicked to the curb. I really was. And that's when I decided, what's right? What's wrong? It seems as what's right is whatever works for you and you can get away with. And I'm not going to let anybody push me anymore. Everything that they do, I'm going to do better.
After getting scammed twice by a couple of low-life bankers,
he said, "Look, kid, you're green behind your ears. Welcome to the real world. This ain't Miami. You got nothing without me. You got a pipe dream without me."
As a last resort, TJ Dominguez decides to become a drug smuggler because he needs $14 million fast to keep a promise he made to his father.
I had a talk with my dead father, and I said to my father, "You're not going to approve of what I'm going to do. I'm not asking for your permission, but I'm going to get the sugar mill done. But I'm going to do it my way. I'm tired of asking people for money."
So TJ gets a boat and heads for the Bahamas, looking to buy enough weed to fill Willie Nelson's tour bus.
So I think I'm ready to go and go to the Bahamas, where I figured that's where all this pot comes from. I didn't even know where the Bahamas was at. Never been to the Bahamas. I'm going to do this. I'm geared. I'm determined to do this. I just don't know where the Bahamas are at.
I'm Jonathan Walton, and this is Cocaine Air, the TJ Dominguez story, episode 2. Not My Day to Die.
Let me see your identification.
You don't need to see his identification.
We don't need to see his identification.
It's 1977 now, and Star Wars is the number one movie in the country.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
TJ Dominguez is 25 years old at this point, but unlike Luke Skywalker, he doesn't have a Obi-Wan Kenobi to teach him how to become a drug-smuggling Jedi. His Millennium Falcon is the new speedboat he just bought. And the only Han Solo he can find is far from Harrison Ford.
So I go meet this old Cuban fisherman, and he says, "So what do you want to do, kid?" I said, "I want to go to the Bahamas." He says, "Okay, what are you going to do in the Bahamas?" I said, "I'm going to bring in some pot. You want to go with me?" He goes, "What, are you crazy? I'm too old to go to jail. No, I don't want to go with you." He says, "But I'll tell you how to find the Bahamas." I said, "Okay, fine." He says, "What kind of boat you got?" I said, "I've got a race boat, man. I got a Scarab. You know, close cabin, 454, over 1,000 horses. He says, "Do 100 miles. He says, "No, you don't need to go that fast. You go 20, 30 miles. I said, "Okay." I said, "So how do I find the Bahamas?" He says, "Okay, listen, put the stern in the bow." I'm like, "Whoa, I don't even know what you're talking about, stern and bow." All right, front of the boat, back of the boat. I said, "Where are you going to be coming out of?" I said, "I'm going to probably come out of Hollover."
Hollover is actually a nude beach about 20 miles south of Fort Lauderdale. It's a great spot to launch a secret mission from because, if you think about it, with hundreds of naked, oiled-up bodies lying around, who's going to notice anything else?
So he said, "Listen, here's what you do. Put the ass end of the boat against the sand and be pointing east, right? Now, hit the throttle. You don't need to go 100 miles per hour. He says, "Hit the throttle, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 RPMs. You're going east." He said, "Are you leaving at nighttime or daytime?" He said, "I'm going to leave it at nighttime." He says, "Okay, fine. So when you don't see any more lights from the United States," he says, "now look at your watch." He says, "and look forward to the left or to the right." He says, "Within an hour, you'll see lights glowing." He says, when you see these lights glowing, head toward those lights. That's the first island in the Bahamas. It's called Bimini. There's two of them. There's a North Island and a South Island. He says, now, mind you, you got to go in between, but don't go in the middle. Because if you go in the middle of the two islands and it's low tide, you're going to bottom out your boat. You're going to sink it. And you're going to drown out there. He says, so don't do that. So you got to go all the way to the South Island, aim toward the beach, hang a quick left, parallel the sand, the shore, and you're going to slide right in between both islands. I said, okay, I got that. I said, but listen, what if I don't find the islands within 1 hour? He says, shit. He says, turn around. You're lost. He says, go back. He says, don't keep going forward. There's a big ocean out there. You're not going to find it. You're going to run out of gas. He says, go back to the United States. I said, go back. He says, don't be afraid. The United States is a big country. You're going to hit Key West, Georgia. You're going to hit some land. Just don't keep going east. Turn around and come back west. And that's how I found the Bahamas.
And you weren't scared just heading out on a boat?
My heart was pounding like there's no tomorrow. Yes, I was scared. If I told you anything different, I'd be a liar.
But you did it anyway.
I had no choice. I became a smuggler.
And keep in mind here, the Bahamas of 1977 is not the Bahamas of today.
The South Island is like, it was at the time, it was kind of like a ghost island. There's nothing happening there. People didn't even live there, so to speak. You know, just a few homes. But the North Island was like Las Vegas. Glitter, lights everywhere. I remember I was so nervous and so adrenaline flowing through my veins that everything just glittered. And I didn't know where to dock either, right? It was like all new to me. So one sign stood out and it said, Big Game, the Big Game Hotel. And I said, shit, that's it. I'm playing the biggest game of my life. That's where I'm going to dock. So I pulled in there.
And that's where TJ meets that Bahamian guy who mistakenly thinks that he's there to buy gas. But after TJ tells him he actually wants to buy marijuana, bales and bales of marijuana, the guy offers to take TJ to see his uncle, who, it appears, is a big-time drug dealer.
It was about 11 o'clock. It was nighttime. And he said, I get off in an hour, check into the hotel, and I'll take you to see my uncle. So I didn't want to check into no hotel or anything like that. I didn't have that much money left. I had like $25,000, and the rooms there were expensive. And I didn't go there as a tourist. I just wanted to buy weed. So I waited, and I didn't know what to do because I had the hundreds in a bag. I didn't want to take them with me, and I didn't want to leave it on the boat. So I got a beer and just sat on the boat and waited for this guy to get off work. When he got off work, we went down the ways a little bit. The island's only 7 miles long, half a mile wide, so you don't really go far there. And we walked over to where his uncle was at. And he introduced me to the uncle and told him that I wanted to buy weight, bales. At the time, again, all kinds of things are going through my head because I have to tell you, the only industry at the time in the Bahamas other than tourism, and it really wasn't all that, is piracy. You know, the islands were built on piracy. So it does exist even to today. You got to be careful out there. I mean, they'll pull up to your boat to ask him for help and they rob you. So all these things are going through my head, you know? And the guy goes, how much weight you want to buy? How much money you got? I said, I'll buy all the pot you got. And just like, well, I don't even know a price. They're even asking for a price, right? Yeah, $25,000, that's all I got, you know? So the guy goes, all right, we're going to do the exchange in the middle of the ocean. I said, why the middle of the ocean? Because that's where I feel comfortable, he said. I said, all right. So I'm thinking I'm going to get robbed. They're going to steal my boat, steal my money, throw me in the water, get eaten up by a shark. But I have to go. I have no choice. Not my day to die. So sure enough, I see the light. I pull up to it with my speedboat by myself. We tie up next to each other. and there's two guys on their boat, right? And one guy's an older guy's got his arms crossed. He's leaning against the cabin, and then the other guy is up against the rail. As we tie up the boat, the guy says, "Let me see the money." I said to him, "Let me see the pot." And he says, "Let me see the money. How much money you got?" I said, "How much weight you got?" So he got a couple of 100 pounds. I said, I wanted to make sure that it was pot and not oregano that I was buying, because the Bahamas is notorious for that. So I got a dive knife strapped to my leg. I didn't have a gun with me, but I could throw a knife pretty good. I'm pretty good about it. Back in my karate days, pretty much all kinds of weapon.
So at this point, TJ doesn't know if he's going to be robbed and killed and fed to the sharks. Meanwhile, all he's got to defend himself is a knife to throw, like he's John Wick or something. If it was me, I'd be on my knees, saying my Hail Marys. But TJ doesn't back down. And all of a sudden, the drug dealers show TJ what they have.
The guy throws two bales. I take my knife out and I cut a window into the bale. Right, I open it up. I wanna make sure it's pot. I stick the knife deep inside. This thing was hard packed. 100 pounds each, couple of 100 pounds of pot. And we're floating in the middle of the ocean out there at 2 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, no lights, back and forth. And the guy says, "Okay, you satisfied?" I said, "All right." So I take some duct tape. I tape up the pot again. I throw it on the floor of the boat. So the guy says, "Let me see the money." So I take my money and I give it to him. He says, "How much is there?" I said, $25,000. He says, $30,000. You're $5,000 short. I said, "Well, that's what I got." Guy says to me, "Hey, man, there's no credit here." I said, "Well, I'm not asking you for a credit line. I'm just asking for a little bit of trust. I'm going to give you $25,000. I don't have any more money." He goes, "There's no credit here. Don't you hear me?"
If you're like me, then what's for dinner can be a complicated question to answer. I thank my lucky stars I found Omaha Steaks. Dinner's handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And the quality of these steaks is just out of this world, better than anything I've ever bought in a supermarket. They've got ribeyes for special occasions, juicy burgers for a cookout, grilling chicken, seafood, and gourmet franks. Omaha Steaks has what you want. They even have delicious sides, dessert, and more. So a great dinner is minutes away. Steakhouse quality without the steakhouse prices. Your family will think dinner took hours, not minutes. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, mostly because I think dispensaries are a little overwhelming and pretentious. That's just me. You do you. But there's this company called Mood, Mood.com, that's changing the way people can buy cannabis. You know how most dispensaries make you choose between strains with ridiculous names and you have no idea which one's for you? Well, that's what Mood.com figured out. And by the way, you can get 20% off your first order with promo code WALTON. If you go to Mood.com and click Shop by Mood, it'll tell you which strain does what. Want to be more social at a party? There's a flower for that. Need to focus and get work done? There's a flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, there's a flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and arrives in a discreet box. Best of all, everything's backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code WALTON. So head to Mood.com and get 20% off your first order now. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. So you've heard me talk about BetterHelp for a long time, but I don't know if we've actually ever talked about how much people love this service when they use it. You can check it out for yourself at betterhelp.com/reviews to see amazing customer reviews in real time. The reviews are updated every day with hundreds of people saying how much they love BetterHelp and how helpful it's been to them. BetterHelp has an average live therapy session rating of 4.9 out of 5 based on over 1.7 million client session reviews. More than 6 million people have used BetterHelp globally. The consistent feedback from real users makes it easy to see why so many people continue to choose BetterHelp. BetterHelp therapists have at least 3 years and 1,000 hours of hands-on experience. BetterHelp makes it easy to get started, answer a few questions, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, and switch therapists at any time if it's not the right fit. See the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
He starts getting a little boisterous with me. And I say, yeah, I hear you, man. I said, well, what are we going to do? Argue here about $5,000? I said, I just don't have it. He said, hey, man, there ain't no credit in this business. And the other guy in the back starts, you know, making a little bit of noise. Next thing I know, he says, give the kid the pot. I think he'll come back. And I say to him, listen, man, if I don't come back, I'm either dead or I'm in jail, but I'll come back. And the guy repeated, you know, in this business, there's no credit. I says, I will bring you your $5,000 back. I promise you. So I take off that same night. I bring it back to the United States. And, you know, it's funny because in the middle of the ocean, it's okay. You're out there, you're hearing all kinds of different noises. You're looking at stars, you think they're airplanes blinking and coming after you. You start hallucinating, really. It's really amazing to be out there in the middle of the ocean on a small speedboat, you know? And that part is not really scary at all because you're just out there with the elements. The scary part comes when you can see the shore. When you come to the shore, and now I throttle back, and you take a deep breath, and now it's all hell's gonna break loose, balls to the wall, you know, this is it. You swim so far, they die on the shore. The scariest part is the last mile. That's when it's all gonna cave in, or you're gonna be, you know, you're gonna come out a winner.
What can happen in the last mile?
Get popped.
Which means what?
Guns. Jail. Embarrassment for your family, had no knowledge what I was doing. I don't like lying or deceiving anybody. I just against everything that I was raised to be. But I had no choice but to forcefully lie to the people that I loved and the people that I cared for. Because if I, first of all, they would have never tolerated, never would have agreed to what I was doing. That's the first thing from Jump Street. Second, I would have involved them indirectly in my world, which means that if things ever blew up, the feds, they round up everybody, including the dog and the cat. They don't leave anybody standing, and then we'll sort them out later. So which meant that I would have put my mom, my wife, my family at risk. Everything that's negative, just lose everything. Lose the money, lose the boat, devastation, lose it all. You swim so far to die on the shore.
And which branch of law enforcement were you scared of?
Like, for example, Indian Creek. Indian Creek is a very high-end neighborhood here, probably some of the most expensive real estate in the United States, small little island. They have a Indian Creek police boat that patrols around the little island. I happen to have to go by them. People don't realize coming into the States, it's not like just open season everywhere. They're government cuts. They're maybe 100 foot wide, 200 foot wide, and these little openings are like highways cut into slivers. And right in the front is where all of them sit. You have their local police. You have Marine Patrol. You have Coast Guard. You have Customs. You have DEA. There's five of them off the top of my head. They're in front of that little opening, that porthole opening. And that's where you have to thread that needle. You have to hope that you can go through all of those guys without getting popped.
And you did.
Oh, yeah. Many, 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 many times.
And what's the secret to that?
Well, the secret to that is you're really rolling the dice. At that point, it's in the hands of God.
TJ's first trip is a success. and he soon proves extremely adept at the craps game of marijuana smuggling. In no time, TJ's bringing in hundreds of pounds of marijuana from the Bahamas regularly and making hundreds of thousands of dollars in the process. It's not the $14 million he needs to get the sugar mill off the ground and keep that promise he made to his dad, but it's definitely a good start. And TJ always seems to have Lady Luck on his side.
But later on, I'm taking the element of luck out of it. I'm becoming a professional. And where a lot of people, they made their money and they go, open up bottles of champagne. I thought things out and how can I improve on this situation? Let me give you one scenario. I'm driving a car with 200-300 pounds of marijuana in the back of the car. It was stop and go traffic on 95. I get hit by a lady. Some nice old lady hits me in the back, right? Well, she pulls over, stop and go traffic. I have to pull over, right? So when I pull over, I get out of the car. Oh my God, I hit you. I said, ma'am, nothing happened here. Look, there's not even a scratch on the car. Oh no, my husband says we gotta call the police. I got 200 pounds of weed in the trunk. I don't want to call the police, ma'am. I don't care if you caved in my car. What I'm calling the cops, right? Well, this woman is doing what her husband told her to do, call the police. So I'm arguing with her. Ma'am, not even a scratch is on my car. I'm not going to file a police report. Why go through all the trouble? Nothing happened here. Why don't you go your way and I'll go my way? No, because my husband said, well, 20 minutes later, I convinced this lady not to call the cops. I jump in my car. As I'm driving away, I said, how the hell can I prevent that from happening again? Then I came up with the idea of having a chase car. I put another car behind me. The other car behind me, we would be tethered FM. So we're talking on the radio.
Everything alive, every little mic.
Right? And here's what I did. The car behind me is more of a high-end looking type of car, Corvette, Ferrari. Wherever I go, he goes. If I go left, he goes left. If I go right, he goes right. Here's what happens. If a policeman tries to pull me over, his job is to hit the policeman on the right rear of the car. You spin him around, you throw your door open, you throw a bottle of Boost on the ground. Gonna maybe have your ass kicked maybe by the cop. He's gonna be a little pissed off that you hit his car. You got Boost on the ground. He's gonna make you blow, walk a straight line. You wanna keep him there as long as possible while I get away. Now here's what happens. I got great lawyers that I pay a lot of money to. And then when he says to you, blow, you refuse. When I'm gone, give me that damn thing. I'll blow. There's no alcohol. Worst case scenario, your foot slipped off the brake. You hit the gas, lost control. Ticket. And we're going to pay somebody for that thing to go away. You want to blend in. Traffic, for example, when I moved my drugs, I moved them from 9 to 5 in heavy traffic, because now you're increasing your odds of arrival. If you're the only car in at nighttime out there, you're more apt to be pulled over.
So you like the traffic?
I like the traffic. I do it between business hours. Otherwise, I'm that beacon standing out there. So I did the same thing with boats.
And TJ starts studying and strategizing and learning from other smugglers' mistakes. Like an NFL quarterback watching old game footage of a competing team, TJ starts perfecting the art of smuggling.
I read the newspapers to see so-and-so got popped. How did he get popped? Well, he did this and this and this wrong. For example, when you're going out there and you're coming back, now you're coming back not in a speedboat, but you're coming back in a sports fishing vessel, which is, $3-5 million boat with a fighting chair in the back. You're not really going fishing, but you got to have fish in the boat if you say you're going fishing. So I know these guys have bought frozen fish. Okay, well, they're coming back, the fish didn't thaw out. And you're telling the Coast Guard that you were fishing, and the guy says, well, where'd you catch these frozen fish at? and the eyes were all glossy. So, you know, you're like, now I'm going to drill your boat and I'm going to check to see what you got. So everything has to match. The story has to blend in. You know, that's why I stress to my guys when they're in that type of vessel, I made them wear uniforms. I made them wear white uniform, white shoes, gold bars. You got to fit the part. Otherwise, you got a guy with a scruffy outfit, blue jeans with holes, and a $5 million boat. Something there doesn't look right. It's all about the details. And then on the speedboats, what I did later on to, you know, increase my odds of coming in, what I did was I put spotter boats. I hired a guy to hire a bunch of little boats. Okay, and that's my security system. What the purpose of these little boats were, they would go up and down the coast as I'm coming in.
TJ's got all these boats dancing together, choreographed like an aquatic ballet. And he's actually bought a house now, on the water, to unload the hundreds of pounds of marijuana he's smuggling.
So if I'm coming in with my speedboat, with my shadow boat behind me, or side by side, we tie up, right? Now we're maybe 5 miles out, 3 miles out. We're tied up. We got no lights running, lights on the boat. We're shut down. Now I get on my radio and I radio my top security guy. You know, I say, hey, how does the driveway look? And then he'll answer back,
mother-in-law's in the driveway.
What that means is that the little spotter boats are going up and down. Say you're on a boat, right? So they're like, hey, man, I dropped my lighter in the water. Can I get a light? And they're going to come up to you and see if you're fishing. If there's no fishing gear and there's two, three guys in blue jeans, chances are this is the heat. This is the police. This is DEA. This is custom. So that's a problem. And that's what their job was, to just go and interview people on their boats, talk to them. Hey, are they biting? Oh, I don't know, you're not fishing, that kind of stuff. And then they report to my main head guy. And then my head guy reports to me.
Mother-in-law's in the driveway, sit tight. How far out are you?
I'm 5 minutes out.
Okay, she's moving, hit it.
So now I send the lead boat, the shadow boat goes out first. And I stand back and look at the shadow boat. If there's no movement, nobody following the shadow boat, I go behind them. Because he opened up, he blazed the trail. And then we pull up behind the house where I have a crew in the house of maybe 3-4 guys. And they come out and then pick up the duffel bags. I jump off the boat.
Jonathan Walton here from Queen of the Con. Getting scammed completely changed the trajectory of my entire life. And when the man you're about to meet got scammed, it changed the trajectory of his entire life too.
By day, I owned and operated the largest Lamborghini dealership in the world. But by night, I flew tons of cocaine for Pablo Escobar.
This is the greatest story that's never been told because this guy's been in prison.
You're out of prison, what, 2 days now?
Yeah, 3 days.
And here we are talking.
Listen to Cocaine Air wherever you get your podcasts.
And you never keep these high-speed boats in the back of the house because you bring heat to the house. So what happens is I come off the boat, my crew comes off the boat, another crew gets on the boat. Guys pick up the duffel bag, bring it inside that house, which is on the ocean. Another captain jumps on that boat, takes that boat to a marina, which is owned by a friend of mine. The boat sits in the marina. The next day, that boat's going to come out of the water, go on a trailer, and go into a warehouse. We're going to clean the boat out, clean it, wax it, get it ready again to go next week. So that boat is there.
And all these boats that TJ starts acquiring for his smuggling operation are very understated, very plain. On a crowded dock or marina with hundreds of other boats around, competing for attention with flashy paint jobs and clever names like Fin and Tonic, The Codfather, or Cirrhosis of the River, TJ's boats are lying low, not getting noticed at all. And that's just how he wants it.
A smuggler's boat is either white, black, dark blue, no graphics. Why? You want to keep it simple. Again, you want to blend in. Here's what happened. The government would fly their airplane with a strobe camera and take pictures of you. Brrr, be 1,000 pictures in a minute. Well, they can't arrest you, obviously, but here's what they do. If you've got one-of-a-kind boat with graphics that are easily identified, what do? They print this out, they post this out, they start looking for that boat. Here is the boat that we saw with drugs. Now you just heated up your boat. Now that you're gonna put a transponder on your boat to track your bug, or they're gonna keep a profile on your boat. So these are all these little detailed things that make towards success or failure. It's like a game of chess in the water. You have to try to outthink the guy that's trying to outthink you. So it's really all mental. Before it all happens, you have to put pieces in front of you and be ahead of the curve before you turn that corner. So you know what's on the other side of that fence. And how do I do that? By putting players, putting pieces, putting pawns. And these pawns and these pieces, they don't know me. So I'm buffered by one guy. They never meet me. They know there's a guy out there that's doing something, but they don't know who that guy is. In the event that they get in trouble, it doesn't ripple back to me.
And for the more than 3 years TJ's smuggling pot from the Bahamas, his chess pieces are doing their job. And authorities are never quite able to checkmate King TJ. You've heard that expression, fortune favors the bold? Well, they got it wrong. Fortune actually seems to favor TJ Dominguez. That's not to say he isn't almost killed 1,000 different times.
How many times have you cheated death?
I couldn't count them. One of the ones that stands out the most in my mind, being on a speedboat, doing close to 100 miles per hour, side by side to my other speedboat, in BAT, Bahamian American Task Force, a Huey helicopter with a 50 caliber machine gun mounted on the door, shooting at us, trying to take our load. These guys were serious about bringing us down. We have tracer bullets. They rode us for what appeared to be an eternity, and you're looking at the bullets coming at you as the boat jumping up in the wave. So you're now aiming at the helicopter. The helicopter is not one of these fancy American helicopters. This is from, like, you know, Vietnam War, a relic. And you got the guy sitting in the door, and you're seeing these bullets coming off the cannon, and they're going right over the boat. The boat's jumping up on the wave, coming back down. The water splashing, everybody screaming. I got gas tanks that run on the rail of the boat that are carrying 400 gallons of fuel. All it takes is for one of those bullets to hit the side of the boat, and we're gone. We're like a fuel bomb. And I hear my guys screaming. They're going, "We're gonna blow up, we're gonna die, we're gonna die." I'm screaming back on the FM transmitter, "Well, God damn it, jump then, jump. We're not stopping these goddamn boats. We're not stopping, we're not stopping." You know, we're screaming back and forth, and it's chaos as they're breaking all out. And that went on for a long bit of time until I finally said, "Well, you know, we're just gonna die here." You know, and at that point, we slowed the boats down. I said, "Slow it down, slow it down." We had three guys on one boat, three guys on the shadow boat. And it was pot at the time. And there was no hiding it. It was right in the open. So they knew where the drugs were at. There were bales. And one guy jumped to the shadow boat. The other guy jumped to the shadow boat. I jumped to the shadow boat. I left the boat going maybe 3-4 miles per hour. So what they did was they peeled off, and then they went after the boat that was now going 3-4 miles per hour.
God, I feel like I need a cigarette or something after that.
Back in those days, I don't want to say that there's corruption, because I don't want to. You know, it's not a government thing, individual things. People make choices. People make good choices. People make bad choices.
But that was a calculated move to, like, let me abandon the drug boat and send it in a different direction.
Yes.
Thinking
yes.
They might follow.
Thinking there is $1 million in that boat that you may maybe show an interest on.
Yeah. And that saved your life.
It saved my life and the lives of the other guys.
By the early 1980s, TJ's marijuana business is humming along. He's captaining a bunch of boats and smuggling bales and bales of weed into South Florida. And he's making a lot of money doing it. But he's also losing a lot of money, too.
I mean, abandoning all that marijuana and the boat it was on when authorities were shooting at him may have saved TJ's life, but it cost him $1 million at least. TJ's trying to clear $14 million to get that sugar mill in Haiti off the ground so he can quit drug smuggling altogether and earn his living legitimately. To further that end, he starts multiple other businesses, real businesses.
I owned a cell phone company. And at the time, the phones, people didn't even know how to spell. They didn't know what the hell a cell phone was. You know, no sense explaining it. The phones were $5,000 out of most people's reach. But it gave me an edge because it allowed me to do business, be efficient, and be connected.
TJ also opens a car dealership. More on that later. He breaks ground on a housing development. And now he needs an infusion of cash to keep everything running and to circle back and get the sugar mill in Haiti going.
I started doing the math on that. I said, by the time I get done with this thing, it's going to be 5 years are going to go by. I need to bring in at least a ton of marijuana, something, you know, that would actually speed this whole process up. Because again, I didn't know how long I was going to last, because every time I left the house, the odds were always stacked against me. So I knew one day would come that would bring the house down.
At this point, it's 1981, and the weed supply in the Bahamas is extremely unreliable.
I'm doing the marijuana trips back and forth from the Bahamas, right? And I'm buying marijuana from the government. They're seized. Trips that they seize, they're supposed to burn the weed, but they're not really burning it. Like I told one of the officers over there, yeah, we'll burn it. I got people that are burning in Miami when they roll it into a joint. So it's going to get burned sooner or later. In the meantime, I could take in cash everything you've got here. Now, what happens is they're not busting enough of these loads because there's no pot growing in the Bahamas. So it's just a place that hit or miss. And I don't have contacts in South America. I'm not in the drug business. I'm not a pot going guy. So I'm depending on these people that I knew to provide me with marijuana. How is that working out? 200 pounds, 400 pounds, 500 pounds, maybe 800 pounds, back to 200 pounds. And, you know, doing 200 pounds of weed at a time, I wasn't really setting the world on fire. But what's happening is I need $14 million to complete the sugar mill project. This is going to take forever. So I'm doing the math on this thing, and I'm like, got my arms crossed now, and I see that I've got, let's say, $300,000-$400,000, and I got $200,000-$300,000 of pot, and I'm sitting around waiting for more pot. I got more money than I can buy with pot. So how do you solve that situation? You got to go where the pot grows. Where does the pot grow? Colombia. I can't take a speedboat down to Colombia. So how do I get to Colombia? I need an airplane.
To see some incredible photographs documenting TJ's life, go to cocaineair.com. And if you're enjoying Cocaine Air, please hit that share button and text it to your friends and family right now. And if you feel comfortable, leave us a 5-star review. Reviews really help other listeners find us. Cocaine Air was created, written, and executive produced by me, Jonathan Walton, for Jonathan Walton Media. Executive producers, Evan Goldstein, and the inimitable TJ Dominguez. Audio engineering by me, Jonathan Walton. All sound design and editing was done by the super talented Puneeth Shenoy from Podcast Pundits. And the Cocaine Air cover art is by Bobby Animation. We've got a lot of fascinating untold stories like Cocaine Air coming down the pike at Jonathan Walton Media. So subscribe and keep an ear out.